tied to something in Scourge's past, some dark secret or inconvenient truth. Bringing it to light was an effective way to make Scourge look bad. If she turned out to be someone looking for revenge, it would prove that Scourge had been sloppy in the past, planting seeds of doubt about him in Nyriss's mind. And even if she wasn't, the situation was still likely to create some kind of mess for Scourge to clean up. That alone might be enough to convince Setchel to help her. Simply refusing the meeting wasn't an option, however. Now that he knew she was out there, Scourge had to take action. Whatever the motive behind her search for him, he had to face her. It was the only way to unravel the mystery. Setchel knew all this, of course. That was why he suggested sending Murtaugh along. On the surface, it appeared the best way to deal with a possible enemy. But Scourge knew what he really wanted was to have somebody else there who would report back on the meeting if the truth turned out to be embarrassing. On the other hand, if he decided to meet her alone, he was putting himself at greater risk. It might also look like he had something to hide, and he had no doubt Setchel would twist that fact to suit his own needs somewhere down the road.
"Congratulations," he said to the smaller Sith. "You've backed me into a corner. Set up the meeting, and tell Murtaugh and his men to be there."
"Of course, Lord Scourge," Setchel said with a mocking bow. "I'm always happy to be of service."
Mitra was wary of a trap even before she felt the warning premonitions through the Force. Setchel had given her a time and location for the meeting. He'd even told her the name of the man from the Holovid, Lord Scourge. But she still didn't trust him. Arriving at the location only confirmed her suspicions. Setchel's instructions had led her to an isolated cave on the outskirts of the city. The perfect place for an ambush. A single speeder was parked in a clearing about 50 meters away from the entrance. Evidence that somebody else was already there. It was possible the Sith had come alone, but Mitra estimated the vehicle could hold as many as 6 adult humanoids. There was also the possibility that other speeders had been hidden nearby, meaning she had no idea how many might be waiting for her inside the cave. T3M4 obviously shared her concerns. The droid twittered nervously as she brought the speeder in for a landing on a patch of bare dirt near the other speeder.
I know, she muttered. "But this is the only lead we've got."
She climbed out of the speeder and extended a small cargo ramp so T3 could exit as well. The mouth of the cave loomed before them, black and forbidding. Earlier, she had discussed several dozen strategies with T3, laying out contingency plans for the most common conceivable scenarios. Fortunately, their planning had included a potential ambush by enemies hiding under the cover of darkness.
"Operation Supernova is a go," she whispered.
T3 beeped uncertainly.
"We'll give them every chance to surrender," she assured him. "But be ready for this to get ugly. Hopefully it won't come to that," she added. "Maybe Lord Scourge is curious enough about why I'm here to hear me out before he tries anything."
T3 didn't reply. She took it as a bad sign that he was suddenly speechless. Walking slowly, she entered the cave. It was too dark to see more than a meter in front of her, but she could sense several other beings inside, watching her approach. She assumed they were using night vision goggles. It was the only way for anyone's sight to pierce the darkness of the cave. She tried to act timid and unsure, a clueless victim walking heedlessly into the waiting trap. The more vulnerable she appeared, the closer they'd let her advance before taking any action.
"Stay close, T3,
she whispered, keeping her voice low so only he could hear her.
"Is anybody here?"
she called out, making her voice tremble slightly. She took another seemingly cautious step forward.
"Hello? Is anyone here?"
"Don't move!" a voice shouted from the darkness.
We have you surrounded.
Lord Scourge? She called out. Is that you? I only want to talk.
Lie flat on the ground and put your hands behind your head, the voice ordered. If not, we open fire.
Now, T3!
The little droid turned his headlamp to full power. In the tight confines, it had the intensity of a small sun, easily illuminating the entire cave. The sudden flash of brightness also overloaded the night vision goggles of her adversaries, temporarily blinding them. It took Mitra less than a second to see and process the odds she was up against. Four soldiers, two male and two female, each wearing heavy armor and carrying a blaster carbine, had taken up positions around the cave, forming a loose semicircle around their intended victim. A tall Sith stood in an alcove near the back corner of the cave. The four soldiers opened fire. Even blinded by the flash of T3's lamp, they were disciplined enough to react by unleashing a volley of blaster bolts at the last known location of their target. Unfortunately for them, Mitra's reactions were quicker than theirs. By the time the bolts hit home, Mitra was already on the move. She snapped off a quick back handspring to dodge the blaster fire, then reversed her direction with a flying leap toward the nearest assailant. Her lightsaber was already in her hand when she landed, and she plunged her blade through the vulnerable joint between the chest plate and the right shoulder guard of the soldier's combat suit. Unlike his cortosis-laced armor, the man's flesh and bone provided almost no resistance to the lightsaber as it drove straight through his heart. As he fell to the ground, Mitra thrust her free hand out toward the next closest soldier, palm open. The woman flew backward, lifted off her feet, and hurtled across the cave by the force until she slammed into the rock face of the far wall. She slid to the ground, dead. The other two soldiers had ripped off their night vision goggles and opened fire again. Mitra deflected the bolts with her lightsaber. With their attention focused on the Jedi wreaking havoc in their ranks, the soldiers forgot about T3-M4. The droid took full advantage of the situation, rolling forward until he was close enough to unleash a jet of flame from the short nozzle jutting out from the center of his torso. The flames engulfed the nearest soldier. As his dying shrieks momentarily distracted his companion, Mitra charged forward with a burst of speed to deliver a vicious two-handed slash of her blade that cleaved through the plates of the woman's armor and bit deep into her chest. At last, Mitra turned to face the Sith. Now that she had a chance to focus her attention more closely, she recognized him from T3's holovid. Apparently, Lord Scourge had decided to show up after all. Curiously, he hadn't done anything to help the soldiers during the short and violent encounter. He hadn't tried to flee either. In fact, he hadn't seemed to have moved at all, other than to draw and ignite the crimson blade of his lightsaber. He held his weapon in front of him in a standard defensive posture, staring at Mitra with a look of utter disbelief on his face. Wary of a trap, Mitra took a single step toward him.
You're a Jedi, he said, his words causing her to freeze in her tracks. What he said was true. He saw you. He knew.
Mitra wasn't about to attack someone who didn't seem to want to do her any harm. That went against everything she believed in. But she wasn't going to let her guard down either.
What are you talking about? She demanded.
You're here because of Revan, he said, his voice filled with wonder. You've come to rescue him.
I'm impressed you figured it out so quickly, she admitted.
I didn't figure it out, he said. Revan told me.
The instant the blue-bladed lightsaber had materialized in the human female's hand, Scourge realized she was a Jedi, and he could only think of one reason a Jedi would come to Dromund Kaas in search of him. She was here to rescue Revan. He was impressed with how easily she had dismantled Murtaugh and his hand-picked team. He could feel her channeling the Force, yet it was somehow different from what he had felt when he battled other Sith. She wasn't afraid to kill, but he sensed she took no real pleasure in it. Instead of feeding off her anger and hate, it was as if she kept her emotions at arm's length, so the force could flow through her unhindered. Part of him wanted to leap into the fray. Battling this Jedi would be a true test of his skills. He didn't know which of them would prove the stronger, but he was intrigued by the challenge. Yet another part of him knew she represented something far more significant than a worthy foe.
"What do you mean, Revan told you?"
she demanded.
"When I last spoke with him, he said something I didn't believe. I thought he was lying to manipulate me. I didn't understand what he was trying to tell me."
Actually, Scourge still wasn't sure he understood. Not fully. The female Jedi's presence was proof that Revan was telling the truth about his Force vision. He had hinted to Scourge that his freedom was close at hand. He must have had a premonition of her arrival. The revelation was what had stayed Scourge's blade. He wasn't willing to do battle with her until he had carefully considered all the implications and alternatives.
"If you spoke to Revan, then you know where he is,"
the woman said. She was still poised in a combat-ready stance, as was Scourge, neither willing to make the first move, but each ready to respond to an attack by the other.
"Revan is a prisoner," Scourge told her.
"Then I order you to set him free," she demanded.
"It's not that simple."
Nothing about this situation was simple. As he spoke to the Jedi, Scourge was still trying to understand why Revan had mentioned his vision to him at all. At the time, he'd thought the prisoner was simply trying to manipulate him, to trick him into helping him escape. Now, however, it seemed as if Revan's words had been a warning, almost as if he knew Scourge would find himself in this situation. It made no sense to give any kind of warning to an enemy. However, if Revan believed that he and Scourge were destined to become allies, then his words did make sense. Was it possible he had seen a vision of Scourge working with him? It seemed to be the only answer that fit. He had sometimes sensed that Revan was trying to recruit him to his side. The feeling had been even stronger in their last conversation. He dismissed it as desperation to escape. But what if Revan knew the events he had foreseen were drawing near? What if he had witnessed this confrontation in the cave, and he had been trying to make Scourge understand that they had to become allies to stop the Emperor?
"Tell me where Revan is," the woman said. "Tell me where he's being held, and I will let you walk away."
He realized his adversary was misinterpreting his reluctance to fight as fear. She was as confused about this as he was. Yet the more Scourge thought about it, the clearer it became. Nyriss would never move against the Emperor. He knew that now. He had come to accept that neither she nor any of the other Dark Council members who had plotted with her would ever actually dare to strike. If anyone was going to stop the Emperor from his mad invasion of the Republic, it would have to be Scourge. But he couldn't do it alone.
"Come with me, and I will take you and your droid to see Revan," he said, deactivating his blade. "He will tell you the truth."
The Jedi wasn't so quick to lower her weapon. Her astromech droid rolled up to stand beside her, squawking loudly.
"T3's right. I've already walked into one trap today,"
the Jedi answered.
"I think I've hit my quota."
Scourge understood her reluctance. Under normal circumstances, she would be a fool to accompany him. But this situation was as far from normal as he could imagine.
"Revan told me you were coming,"
he tried to explain.
"I think the Force gave him a vision of us working together."
"Then why did you set the ambush?"
"I didn't know who you were," Scourge pointed out. "You wouldn't tell Setchel any of the details who you were or why you were looking for me."
"You're lying,"
she said with a disbelieving shake of her head.
"You're afraid to face me. You'll say anything to avoid a fight."
"Do I seem afraid to you?"
"No,"
she admitted.
"You seem strangely calm."
"That is because I finally understand what Revan meant. He wants us to unite against a common foe."
"What common foe?"
Our Emperor is planning an invasion of the Republic. Revan wants to stop him. So do I.
Why would you want to stop an invasion of the Republic?
The Emperor is mad. He wants to repeat the mistakes of the Great Hyperspace War. He wants to plunge us into a conflict that will end with our extinction.
The Jedi lowered her lightsaber, but didn't deactivate it.
Then why did you take Revan prisoner on Nathema?
That was before I knew his purpose here.
He could tell she was still suspicious, and rightfully so. But he thought of something that might convince her.
You spoke of Nathema. Have you been to that world? Have you walked upon its surface?
I have,
she said quietly, and he could tell from the haunted expression on her face that she spoke the truth.
That was the Emperor's homeworld. To give himself greater power, he unleashed a ritual that devoured everything. When I saw what happened there, I understood the true depths of his insanity. I realized his mind was so twisted and disturbed that he was not fit to rule, and I swore to find a way to stop him.
He paused and looked steadily at Mitra.
You walk the path of the light. I have chosen to follow the dark side. But we both know the horrors of Nathema are a blight upon the galaxy. Revan knows this as well. That is why he wants us to work together.
The Jedi considered his words carefully, then deactivated her blade. But Scourge could tell she still wasn't wholly convinced.
Before I go anywhere with you, I'm going to need more to go on than just your word, she said.
Scourge nodded. Her caution was a good thing. If she'd believed him too easily, he would have had to question her judgment.
I can bring you proof, he told her. Wait here, and I will return tomorrow.
How do I know you won't just come back with more reinforcements?
You will sense me through the Force before I actually arrive. If I'm not alone, you will have plenty of time to make your escape.
What about Revan?
The Jedi asked.
He is safe for the moment, Scourge assured her. But I cannot free him without help.
You have until tomorrow,
the Jedi told him.
Return with proof, and we can work together to free Revan.
Scourge tucked the hilt of his lightsaber back into his belt and walked slowly past the Jedi and her droid toward the entrance of the cave. They stepped aside at his approach, keeping a safe distance between them. Just before he left the cave, the Jedi called out a final warning.
If you betray me in any way, if you come back with reinforcements, or even if you don't come back at all, I will hunt you down.
Save your anger for the Emperor, Scourge called back over his shoulder. He's the real enemy.
Chapter 22.
Scourge knew he had to act quickly. With long, rapid strides, he marched from the cave to the waiting speeder and took to the air, heading back to Kos City. He'd promised the Jedi he would return to the cave within one day, but that wasn't his biggest concern. Setchel had set up the meeting and maneuvered Scourge into taking Murtaugh with him. No doubt he was eagerly awaiting for the security chief's report on what happened. He had to find Setchel and deal with him before the advisor became suspicious. Setchel would most likely be in the Nexus room, enjoying a selection of fine wines while waiting for Murtaugh to call in. As a Sith Lord, Scourge had access to the facility, but he didn't want to confront Setchel in a public setting. He brought his speeder in for a landing a block away from the club, jumped out, and walked to the building. The slave on duty greeted him as he entered the lobby.
Welcome, my lord,
the young human said, bowing low.
I have a message for Setchel, Scourge told him.
Of course, my lord. Follow me.
As the slave turned to enter the club, Scourge reached out a hand and grabbed him by the shoulder.
"I did not say I wished to speak with him," he hissed. "I said I had a message."
Forgive me, master,"
the slave stammered, obviously terrified.
Please, tell me what you wish me to do."
"Wait until I leave,"
Scourge explained slowly, as if he were talking to a simpleton.
"Then tell Setchel that Murtaugh needs to meet him. He'll know where."
He stared down at the slave.
"Do you understand?"
The slave nodded, his eyes wide with fear.
"Do not tell him I was here,"
Scourge instructed.
"Do not mention me at all. Simply deliver the message. If you fail me, I will have them flay the flesh from your bones."
They both knew it was not an idle threat. By right, Scourge could inflict any punishment he chose on a disobedient slave. Of course, the young man would also be punished if anyone discovered he had lied to a member of the club. But Scourge had far more important things to worry about than the fate of an insignificant slave. The young man stood, still and silent, knowing anything he said could only make things worse. Scourge turned and left the club. Once outside, he ducked around a nearby corner where he could watch the door. Setchel emerged a few minutes later and made his way quickly down the street. He didn't appear to be particularly worried or cautious. He had been expecting to hear from Murtaugh, so he had no reason to be suspicious. Scourge followed him at a safe distance, careful not to draw attention to himself. Setchel didn't head back to Nyriss's stronghold. As Scourge expected, he had a private location where he could conduct business he didn't want others to know about. He continued for several blocks, then stopped at a small two-story apartment building in one of Kos City's residential districts. He punched in the security code to unlock the door and slipped inside. Scourge waited a few seconds, then approached the building. Glancing around to make sure there were no witnesses, he pulled out his lightsaber and ignited the blade, jamming it into the security panel. The lock sparked and sizzled, the circuits frying in an instant. A second later, the door slid open. As he'd suspected, the panel had been programmed to open the door if it malfunctioned, so the residents wouldn't be locked in or out of the apartment complex. The interior was little more than a hall giving access to the various apartments. There were four doors on the lower level, but Scourge ignored them. Setchel would never lower himself to rent a ground floor unit. There was no turbo lift, but in the back of the building there was a staircase leading up to the second level. Scourge made his way up. The suites on the top floor were obviously larger. Instead of four doors, there were only two. Scourge picked one of the doors at random and pressed the buzzer. He waited for nearly a minute, but there was no reply. Either the unit wasn't occupied or the resident was not at home. He tried the buzzer on the other door. A few seconds later, he heard footsteps approaching. Then the door slid open. From Setchel's expression, it was clear he was caught off guard at finding Scourge instead of Murtaugh waiting for him on the other side. Before he could react, Scourge jabbed out with his hand, driving his fingers into Setchel's throat. The other Sith dropped to his knees, gasping for air. Scourge stepped inside the apartment and closed the door behind him. Setchel struggled to speak, but all that came out was a rasping cough.
"Make any sound louder than a whisper, and your life will end in unbearable agony," Scourge warned him.
The advisor held up his hand and nodded to show he understood. Scourge waited patiently for him to catch his breath. After a few minutes, Setchel had the strength to stand up. He brushed his clothes off, trying to compose himself.
"Where is Murtaugh?"
he eventually asked, keeping his voice low.
"Dead,"
Scourge replied. Setchel's eyes flickered wide for an instant, but otherwise he showed no reaction.
"It seems I underestimated this woman," he said.
his tone not in the least bit apologetic.
I assume since you survived that she now shares Murtaugh's fate?
How much did Nyriss know about the meeting?
Scourge demanded, ignoring Setchel's question.
Nothing.
You didn't mention it to her?
Setchel sniffed indignantly.
You have an overly high opinion of yourself if you think Nyriss cares about some anonymous female from your past. This is beneath her notice.
Scourge nodded. Setchel guarded his cards closely. He wouldn't mention anything to Nyriss until he had decided how best to turn the situation to his advantage.
What about Murtaugh?
Scourge asked.
Would he say anything? Would he tell Nyriss where he was going?
She doesn't keep tabs on us like children,
Setchel sneered.
How long until she begins to miss him?
Scourge asked.
You mean, how long until she finds out you got him killed?
Setchel mocked.
I'd say you have another 3 days before she begins to wonder about his absence.
3 days, Scourge muttered. We'll have to move fast.
What are you talking about?
Setchel had obviously sensed Scourge's urgency. He must have assumed something had gone very, very wrong at the meeting. He thought Scourge was in trouble. He wrongly believed the Sith Lord had come here looking for help, and it was making him arrogant. Scourge decided it was time to clarify the situation.
I want your files.
What files?
The ones implicating Nyriss and the other Dark Council members. I want everything you've gathered that could be used to expose them as traitors.
To his credit, Setchel didn't deny the files existed. It would have been a pointless endeavor. Scourge knew him too well. The advisor was loyal to Nyriss, but his primary concern would always be for himself. If things ever went bad, he would need something to bargain with. And what better bargaining chip than detailed records of everything Nyriss and her co-conspirators had been involved in ever since they'd started plotting against the Emperor?
You're crossing a dangerous line,
Setchel warned.
Nyriss has turned a blind eye to my collection. I'm too valuable for her to cast me aside. You, however, are expendable. If she finds out about this, she'll have your head.
Nyriss is not your concern. I am. Give me the files. I won't ask again.
Setchel knew the length Scourge was willing to go in pursuit of information. The scars on his cheek reminded him every time he looked in a mirror. And this time, he couldn't count on a timely interruption to put an end to the torture.
Wait here,
he said, turning and heading into the apartment. Scourge, who had no intention of letting Setchel out of his sight, followed right behind him. Setchel glanced back and sighed in resignation. He made his way to a small closet in the back of the apartment and slid the door open. At first glance, the closet appeared empty. Setchel dropped to one knee and slid back a small hidden panel on the floor, revealing a security keypad. With Scourge watching closely over his shoulder, he punched in the access code. A panel in the back wall of the closet slid aside, revealing a hidden safe. Setchel punched another code into the keypad, and the door opened with an audible click.
Slowly, Scourge warned.
There's a blaster inside, Setchel confessed. But I have no intention of trying to use it against you.
A wise decision.
Setchel pulled gently on the corner of the safe's door, allowing it to swing wide and reveal the contents. As he had said, there was a small holdout blaster inside. There were also several data disks, each labeled with a date and arranged in chronological order.
Is this everything?
Scourge demanded.
It's all here, Setchel assured him. But it's encrypted. If anything happens to me, the data is useless. I'm the only one who can decode it.
Scourge had no way to tell if Setchel was bluffing, but he was willing to take the risk.
I'm sure I can find a slicer somewhere who's up to the challenge,
he said, stepping in close behind him. He brought his left arm up and under Setchel's chin, the forearm pressing hard on his windpipe. At the same time, his right hand reached around and gripped the top of Setchel's head. Setchel had become a liability. Scourge couldn't leave him behind, and taking him with him was far more trouble than it was worth. The smaller Sith struggled to break the hold as Scourge began to apply pressure to the vertebrae in his neck. There were literally hundreds of ways he could have killed Setchel, but given their history, he wanted their final moments to be up close and personal. Setchel tried to kick him, but Scourge had positioned himself so that the flailing foot of the other Sith only struck feebly against his thigh. He took a deep breath, braced his left arm, and yanked hard with his right hand. There was a surprisingly loud pop, and Setchel's body spasmed once before going completely limp. Releasing the grip to let the body slump to the floor, Scourge gathered up the data disks and left the apartment, the door automatically sliding shut behind him. Mitra sat still and silent on the floor of the cave, her legs crossed and her hands held at chest height, palms facing each other. She had opened herself up to the Force, looking for guidance and wisdom. But here on Dromund Kaas, where the dark side prevailed, it was difficult to find the inner tranquility necessary for enlightenment. Having T3 running long, nervous circles around her certainly didn't help. But she was afraid if she told him to stay still, he might have a meltdown. And she understood the droid's anxiety. She still wasn't sure what to make of Lord Scourge. She had sensed that his offer to work together was sincere, though she wondered how much of that was Revan's doing. It was easy to understand how Scourge could be drawn to him. Revan's command of the Force was greater than that of anyone else she had ever met. And she knew how charismatic he could be. Even though he was a prisoner, it wasn't hard to imagine him being in total control of the situation. But if he had recruited Scourge as an ally, it had been out of necessity rather than choice. The Sith was wholly consumed by the dark side. He had no respect for life, no desire to serve any needs but his own. Even if what he said about wanting to stop the Emperor was true, his motivations were survival and self-preservation. She didn't trust him. But if he could prove that he and Revan were on the same side, she would work with him. The risk of betrayal was one she was willing to take if it gave her a chance to rescue her friend. The little droid was passing by her on one of his many, many laps when she heard the sound of a speeder approaching. T3 stopped and dimmed his light, casting the cave in shadow once more.
I told you he'd come back, Mitra said. He's alone, she added, before T3 could ask the obvious question.
She scrambled to her feet as Lord Scourge marched confidently into the cave, ready to respond at the first hint of aggression.
I have what you need, he said, holding up several data disks. This will prove what I said about trying to stop the Emperor. You will see that we are on the same side.
Scourge stepped forward and extended his hand, offering her the disks. She hesitated for only a moment before coming close enough to take them from his grasp. She returned to T3, carefully retracing her steps so as not to turn her back on the red-skinned Sith.
We'll need time to look these over, she said.
They might be encrypted, Scourge told her.
I've never come across a code my friend here couldn't crack, she said, and T3 beeped his agreement.
I suspected as much. How long do you think it will take?
Why? Are you in a rush?
Events have been set in motion, he explained. We have 2, maybe 3 days before the window of opportunity closes.
Work fast, T3, she said.
She looked up at Scourge.
We'd be more comfortable if you weren't hovering over
us. I will return in 3 hours, he said. Alone, of course.
It took only half the time for T3 to decrypt and verify the authenticity of the data. As promised, it confirmed what the Sith had said. He really was plotting to overthrow the Emperor. However, it wasn't just Scourge. Several members of the Dark Council, the Emperor's circle of hand-picked advisors, had joined together in a conspiracy to remove him from the throne. Yet after more than a decade, they had made no real progress. Instead, the discs catalogued a litany of power plays and double-crosses among the various leaders of the conspiracy. They spent so much time plotting against one another that the idea of them actually working together to defeat the Emperor seemed ludicrous.
No wonder he's willing to work with Revan, Mitra muttered. He's just sick of waiting.
By the time Scourge returned, she had made her decision.
I believe you, she said. I'm ready to work together.
Does this mean you'll tell me your name?
The Sith asked.
I'm Mitra, and this is T3-M4.
The droid let out a shrill chirp.
What's he saying?
Scourge asked.
He says it's time for you to take us to see Revan.
The situation has changed. That isn't an option any longer.
Why not?
He's being held by a Sith Lord called Nyriss.
She's on the Dark Council,
Mitra said, recalling the name from the data disks.
She's the one who brought you into the conspiracy.
Scourge nodded.
If she's holding Revan, why can't you take us to him?
When I first made the offer, I was hoping Revan could convince you that we should work together,
Scourge explained.
Going to see him now would only be an unnecessary risk.
I don't understand.
I could probably get you in to see him, but that won't help get him out of his cell, and it might raise suspicion.
Just take me to him, Mitra insisted. Leave the escape to me.
You can't fight your way through Nyriss's entire army of followers, Scourge said. Even with my help, she has hundreds of guards and dozens of acolytes trained in the dark side. If we're going to break Revan out, we need a distraction. Something to draw the attention of the guards away while we sneak in.
I assume you have a plan.
I do,
Scourge said, smiling.
I'm going to get the Emperor to help us.
Chapter 23. Though he appeared calm on the outside, Scourge's heart was pounding as he mounted the steps to the Emperor's citadel. He was playing a dangerous game. But there were no other options. Time was the enemy. If they had any hope of getting Revan out of her dungeon alive, they had to act before Nyriss realized Scourge had betrayed her. Soon, maybe tomorrow, maybe even today, Nyriss would begin to wonder about Setchel and Murtaugh's absence. It wouldn't take her long to learn that they had been working with Scourge, and from there, she would easily fill in the blanks. He'd briefly considered approaching one of the other members of the Dark Council, hoping to convince him or her to help him get rid of Nyriss the same way she had used him to eliminate Darth Zedrix. But even if they'd agreed to help him, it would be weeks before they put a plan into place. Like Nyriss, they were too cautious, too afraid to take any action that might put them at risk. The Emperor was the only Sith on all of Dromund Kaas with the will to take the kind of quick and decisive action required. Convincing him that Nyriss was a traitor would be simple enough with the files he'd acquired from Setchel. The trick was making the Emperor believe Scourge had been an unknowing pawn in her plans. T3 had doctored the data disks, removing all evidence of Scourge's part in the conspiracy. Scourge would claim that he came forward as soon as he learned of the plot. But there was no guarantee the Emperor would believe him. Scourge was going to present the evidence in person. If the Emperor suspected he was lying, or if he was simply powerful enough to see the truth, escape would be impossible. He was putting himself at great risk for the sake of the cause, something he never would have considered before he met Revan. At the top of the stairs, he was stopped by a pair of Sith soldiers clad in red armor. T3 two of the famed Imperial Guard. An army of elite warriors, the Imperial Guard underwent months of brutal training to transform them into the most disciplined and deadly troops in the Empire. Many didn't survive, but those who did emerged as fanatically loyal zealots, willing to sacrifice their lives to defend the Emperor.
"State your business,"
one of the guards said, barring his way with a heavy electrostaff.
"I must see the Emperor immediately."
He hadn't known what kind of reaction his bold statement would produce. Mocking laughter or flat refusal were the most likely options.
"Only those on the Dark Council can speak with the Emperor,"
the second soldier told him, her tone curt and official.
"My name is Lord Scourge. I serve Darth Nihrus. I'm here on her behalf."
The soldiers looked at each other, and he sensed their uncertainty.
"The Emperor is in danger," Scourge insisted. "I must speak with him."
"Wait here,"
the male guard told him. He disappeared inside the Citadel and didn't return for several minutes. The entire time passed in silence. The remaining guard saw no reason to speak to Scourge, and he knew better than to say anything more to her. Simple lies were the most effective, and Scourge had no intention of saying anything more than was absolutely necessary. When the first soldier emerged, he was accompanied by four more of his comrades. All were Sith, and three wore uniforms identical to those of the guards stationed at the door. The fourth was also clad in red armor, but her outfit was more elaborate.
"I am Captain Yari,"
she told him.
"Come with me."
They left the original two guards behind as she led him into the Citadel. She walked in front of him, while two of the newcomers flanked him. The fourth fell into line directly behind him, so that he was completely surrounded. The design of the Citadel reminded Scourge of Nihrus' stronghold. Not surprising, given that she had built her edifice in the same style to honor the Emperor. The interior was a virtual maze of corridors with gray and forbidding stone walls, punctuated by heavy wooden doors leading off to antechambers and side rooms. However, where Nihrus lined the halls with statues, busts, and wall hangings, glorifying her reputation and achievements, the decor of the Citadel was far more utilitarian. Statues were few and far between, and the few splashes of color in the scattered wall hangings were muted by the dim lighting that cast everything in shadow.
"You are taking me to the Emperor?" Scourge asked.
"You may speak with one of the Emperor's advisors."
"Unacceptable. I did not come to meet with a servant."
"The choice is not yours to make,"
Captain Yari replied brusquely. Scourge stopped in his tracks, causing the soldier walking behind to stumble into him. The Sith Lord angrily shoved him back. In response, the two guards who had been at his side whipped out their electrostaffs.
"Stop!"
Captain Yari shouted, and they froze in their tracks.
"I am a lord of the Sith," Scourge reminded him, "and an agent of Darth Nihrus. I order you to take me to the Emperor."
"That is not permitted."
"These are exceptional circumstances."
"How so?"
"That is for the Emperor's ears alone. I must speak to him in person."
"The Emperor does not like to be disturbed."
"He will want to hear what I have to say."
"If he fears you have wasted his time, you will be punished,"
the captain warned. The calm, almost casual way she spoke the simple threat was far more effective than providing gruesome details. But Scourge wasn't about to back down now.
"It will not be a waste of his time."
The captain considered the request, then nodded.
"As you wish."
As she led him down the twisting corridors of the Citadel, Scourge made a mental note of their path. When he and Revan finally struck at the Emperor, they would need to know as much of the layout of the Citadel as possible. Eventually, they turned down a hall that terminated at a pair of large durasteel doors.
"The throne room lies beyond," Captain Yari told him. "There you will find the Emperor."
She turned to face him.
I will give you one last chance to reconsider.
I've made my decision.
Then you must proceed alone. I will not violate the sanctity of the throne room.
She motioned with her hand, and two of the soldiers stepped forward, one by each of the massive doors. Grunting with exertion, they pushed the doors inward, and they stepped to the side, standing at attention with their backs against the wall, just outside the throne room's now open entrance. Scourge expected them to search him, or at least instruct him to turn over his weapons. But Yari and the others simply stood at attention, waiting for him to enter. The fact that they showed no concern over letting an armed Sith Lord speak to the Emperor face to face without any kind of preparation was a testament to the Emperor's unfathomable power. Thinking about that power gave Scourge pause. Like Revan, the Emperor understood the Force in ways Scourge never would. It was possible he experienced the same kinds of visions as the Jedi. It was also possible he could peer into Scourge's mind and instantly know the truth of everything he was saying. Meeting him face to face could be tantamount to suicide.
No, Scourge thought. If that were the case, he would have sensed Nyriss's betrayal long ago.
As powerful as the Emperor might be, he was not omniscient. He was, however, intelligent and cunning enough to have held on to his throne for over 1,000 years, an unprecedented reign among the conniving and cutthroat politics of the Sith. Which meant Scourge would have to be very careful not to say anything that might give him away. Captain Yari and the other guards were still patiently waiting. No doubt they were used to seeing this kind of hesitation in those who were about to meet with the Emperor. Steeling himself, Scourge stepped inside. The throne room was enormous, 20 meters wide and at least 40 meters long, with an arched ceiling that rose 15 meters above. Apart from the throne at the far end, it was virtually empty. The throne sat on an elevated circular pedestal, several meters in diameter. As Scourge walked forward, he noticed that the throne was facing away from him, its high back effectively blocking any view of its occupant. After a few more steps, the pedestal swiveled around, turning the throne so that it faced him. And for the first time in his life, Scourge set eyes upon the Emperor. The figure before him appeared unremarkable. The Emperor was clad in unadorned black robes, the raised hood effectively hiding his face. Yet Scourge could feel the power of the dark side emanating from him with such intensity that it caused a faint rippling of the air. The Emperor rose to his feet, and the Durasteel doors swung shut behind Scourge with a booming crash. Scourge's step faltered briefly at the sound, but he continued forward. As he reached the foot of the pedestal, he dropped to one knee, bowing low, his eyes focused on a spot on the ground in front of him.
"Rise, Lord Scourge,"
the Emperor told him,
"and speak your peace."
Scourge stood up to address the Sith looming above him. The Emperor had thrown back his hood to reveal his face. His eyes were as black as the void itself. Staring into the hollow darkness of the Emperor's gaze, Scourge's mind flashed back to Nathema, and he shivered at the memory. He tried to speak, but the words stuck in his throat. His mouth was suddenly so dry, he felt as if he might choke. He swallowed hard and coughed, finally bringing up enough saliva to talk.
3 years ago, I went to serve Darth Nyriss at your request. I discovered that Darth Zedrix was a traitor. He had allied himself with Separatists to kill Nyriss, and I executed him for his crimes.
Your service has been noted.
There was something strange about the Emperor's voice. It didn't sound like the voice of a single being. It had an unusual echo and resonance, almost as if a great multitude were speaking his words in perfect symphony. A grim theory passed unbidden through Scourge's mind. Was it possible all those that had been consumed by the ritual on Nathema still existed in some form within the Emperor himself? Nyriss said he'd devoured them. But what if she was only partially correct? What if he had imprisoned their spirits inside his own corporeal form, slowly feeding on their life energy over 1,000 years to keep himself young and strong? Scourge pushed such thoughts away. He needed to focus. One wrong word and the Emperor might see through his lies.
"I continued to serve Darth Nyriss after Zedrix's death," Scourge explained. "And I continued to investigate the Separatists."
He paused, waiting for the Emperor to ask what he'd found. After a few seconds, he realized the inquiry was not coming.
"I became suspicious of one of Nyriss's advisors, a man named Secho. I turned the focus of my investigation to him, but Secho was careful. He covered his tracks well. It took me until yesterday before I was certain of his guilt. He was also secretly working with the Separatists, and he suffered the same fate as Zedrix."
"You should speak to Darth Nyriss if you seek to be rewarded for your actions."
There was no change in his tone, but the implied threat was clear. "This is beneath me, and you are wasting my time." Skurt swallowed hard, his mouth dry once more.
"That is not why I have come before you. Among Setchel's effects, I found these data files."
He held up the disks.
"They show that Darth Zedrix was not the only member of the Dark Council to betray you. He was merely sacrificed to keep the involvement of the others secret. Darth Nyriss was also involved in the plot, along with several others."
The Emperor had no physical reaction to the revelation. He stayed as still and calm as death itself. But the air around Scourge seemed to grow colder.
"Are you certain of these accusations?"
"I would stake my life on them, my Lord Emperor."
"You already have."
Scourge felt a shiver trace its way down his spine, and he knew that far more than his life was at risk. The Emperor was no longer a member of the Sith species. His power and immortality had transformed him into a being unique in the galaxy. When he spoke of life and death, it had far deeper meaning than the mere physical existence of the lesser beings that served him.
"Does Nyriss know you are here?"
"No. I came to you as soon as I deciphered the data on Setchel's disks."
There was a long silence, and Scourge had the distinct impression that the Emperor was somehow communicating with someone outside the room. A few seconds later, the doors to the throne room opened, and Captain Yari strode in, accompanied by a Sith wearing the same dark robes as the Emperor. They approached Scourge, and the robed Sith held out his hand expectantly. Scourge handed him the disks.
"Keep Lord Scourge in custody until this matter is settled."
"Forgive me, Lord Emperor," Scourge said, speaking quickly but trying to keep his tone humble. "But Nyriss is expecting my return. If I am absent, she will grow suspicious."
The Emperor's dark eyes seemed to flicker with annoyance, and Scourge feared he had gone too far. The best he could hope for as punishment for his insolence would be a quick and relatively painless death. However, when the Emperor spoke again, it was not to pass judgment on him.
"You are bold to speak to me in this way, and because you are right, I will reward your initiative. This time, when Nyriss falls, you will be first in line for her seat on the Dark Council."
"Thank you, Lord Emperor," Scourge said with a bow.
If your information proves false, however, you will suffer a fate more terrible than anything you can imagine.
As he spoke, the dark circles of his eyes seemed to fill with a swirling red mist. And for a brief instant, the Emperor gave Scourge a glimpse of his true self. Scourge cried out in anguish as the Emperor's mind brushed against his. Then he collapsed to the floor, shaking like a child. The touch lasted less than a second, but in that time, he witnessed indescribable horrors that dwarfed anything the dark side could conjure even in his worst nightmares. And beneath the formless terrors lurked the unbearable void, the pure emptiness of total annihilation. It was over as quickly as it had begun, the awful vision retreating into his subconscious like a repressed memory as Scourge picked himself up off the floor. Neither Captain Yari nor the robed Sith made any move to help him.
"Come with me,"
the captain said once he was on his feet. Only then did Scourge notice that the Emperor had retaken his seat on the throne, and that the pedestal had spun around to face away from him. The dark-robed Sith stayed behind, as Yari led Scourge out of the throne room and into the hall beyond.
"I see why you tried to talk me out of this,"
Scourge muttered, as they made their way back toward the Citadel's main entrance.
"You took a great risk,"
Yari said, though it was hard to tell if she thought him admirable or foolish.
"But if your information is good, it sounds like you'll be on the Dark Council the next time we meet."
"What about Nyriss?"
Scourge asked.
"What will the Emperor do to her?"
"She will be purged by the Imperial Guard," Yari said, "along with her entire staff of followers."
"I'd rather not be there when it happens," Scourge said. "When will you make your move?"
"Soon,"
the captain said.
"For now, return to Nyriss so she doesn't grow suspicious."
They had reached the top of the staircase leading down from the Citadel's entrance to the street below.
"I will tell my people not to harm you,"
Captain Yari promised before turning away. Just before she disappeared into the Citadel, she added,
"But when the battle starts, try to stay out of the way, just in case."
Chapter 24 Mitra didn't like the idea of pretending to be Scourge's newly purchased slave, but the Sith had assured her it was the best way for her to infiltrate Nyriss' stronghold without drawing unwanted attention. To complete the ruse, she had changed her functional pants and top for a revealing purple outfit, more suited to a dancer in one of the low-rent clubs she'd frequented during her days as a mercenary. The tight-fitting clothes left her arms and midriff bare, but an excess of exposed skin wasn't the worst part of the disguise. Scourge had also insisted she wear the slave's shock collar around her neck. It was non-functional, of course. She'd had T3 carefully inspected to make sure. But she still rankled at the idea of adorning herself with a symbol so closely linked to the galaxy's most vile practice. However, as distasteful as it was, she knew Scourge was right. Every slave on Drummond Kos was forced to wear the collar. Without it, no one would believe their story. T3 was accompanying them as well, similarly equipped with a non-functioning restraining bolt.
"Welcome back, Lord Scourge,"
a guard stationed just inside the main entrance said as the trio passed by.
"Darth Nyriss was just asking about you."
"In what regard?"
the Sith asked, as Mitra struggled to hide her interest.
"Sechel and Murtagh both left 2 days ago. She wondered if you knew where they had gone."
"They didn't include me in their plans,"
Scourge said with a shrug.
"I've been scouring the slave markets for the past few days, looking for a worthy purchase."
"Of course, my lord,"
the guard said with a slight bow. He snuck a quick peek at Mitra, a knowing glint in his eye and a faint smile on his lips, before turning his attention back to Lord Scourge.
"I will inform Darth Nyriss that you have not seen the others," he said.
"Good," Once I am settled, I will go speak with her myself to see if she wants me to inquire after them.
He turned on his heel, dismissing the underling.